My mother, Emma Louise de Slover Heitker, was born August the 15th, 1915, in Croswell, Michigan. Her parents were Lizzie Verghoeven de Slover and Gustav de Slover. She was the fourth child of the two of them and the first girl. There were to be nine living children at the end of all those births. Now, you have to know two things about this family in order to understand the rest of the story. One of them is the order of the birth of the other children, or all the children. As I said, first there were three boys, then my mother, then there were three more boys, and when my mother was 12, her only sister was born. And then there was one more boy, who's my uncle, who's just 4 years older than I. The other thing you have to know is that this was a dirt poor family. Grandpa had come from Belgium when he was 19, all alone to get rich. He never went back and he never got rich. Grandma had come with her family, didn't know my grandpa, when she was four, the first of what would be 12 children, one of whom was born on the boat on the way over. The other thing is, when you're that poor, you've got to do a lot of using of a lot of the things over and over. So hand-me-downs was the only way you were dressed. Maybe some of you were in that same category I was. Well, hand-me-downs weren't too much of a problem in the first 2-3 years. And that time in my family and most other families, the boys and girls were dressed alike. Long white gowns, long white stockings, little black button boots, and it didn't make any difference if you were a boy or a girl. And they just got passed on down, and they went past my mother a few more times before they wore out and became rags. But then when you got to be about 3 or 4, it started making a difference. My mother got my Uncle Prosper's clothes after my Uncle Cyril got them and after Uncle Alphonse got them. Well, what were these clothes? They were long coveralls in the winter with wool shirts, and then there were the socks that my grandma knitted. My grandma was not a good knitter. They were full of bumps and bubbles. The two in a pair were very seldom the same length. At least by the time my mother got them, they were kind of worn down a little bit, so they weren't quite as bumply and bubbly. And the shoes, they were high-topped, brown, usually, leather shoes. Oh, she hated those clothes. Now, in the summer, they wore the coveralls without a shirt, and they were usually barefoot, but she still hated those clothes. I wonder if that's the reason why I never saw her wear a pair of long pants, you know, slacks. And she always wore high heels and hose. Of course she wore them to go to church and to go shopping along with a hat. But, you know, she canned and she cooked and cleaned. Why, she even scrubbed the floor in those high heels and skirt. Well, sometimes she took them off and went barefoot, especially during the war when, you know, nylons were hard to get. But she never wore other kinds of shoes or slacks or pants. Well, she started school when she was about 5 years old, wearing, of course, her brother's clothes. And the first week of school, the teacher sent a note home saying they wanted my grandmother to come in and have a little talk. Mrs. de Slover, I know that we're all having hard times financially, but you can't send a little girl, Emma, you can't send her to school in boys' pants. She's got to wear dresses or skirts. Okay, said my grandma. And she went home and got out all of her feed sacks and her flour sacks and her salt sacks and got ready to make my mother some dresses. Now, the problem is my grandmother was no better at sewing than she was at knitting. So she held up one of the flour sacks and one of the seed sacks and found one she thought was about the right size. And then she got her scissors out and she cut a hole for the neck and she cut two holes for the arms. They weren't quite the same place on the sack, but it was okay when she was wearing it. Nobody noticed. Now, in the wintertime, she did still wear her brother's pants underneath it because, after all, it got pretty cold up in Michigan. And in the wintertime, sometimes she would also wear that long flannel or wool shirt. She still hated it because by the time she grew through the year, she'd had all these made by her mother, but they very seldom ever fit very much. And finally, the sacks all got too small, and she couldn't wear those flower sack dresses anymore. And her father went to Woolworths 5 and 10 every fall from then on and bought her three cheap, very cheap, house dresses. Those house dresses in the fall when she started school were really wide and really long. But by the time spring came, they were kind of tight and awful short. She hated those dresses. I wonder if that's why I never saw her shopping in Woolworths. And she never brought house dresses. She never wore a house dress. She always wore a skirt or maybe a jumper, with her high heels and her hose, of course. Maybe that's why. Well, she never got past eighth grade. Actually, she hardly got through eighth grade because she had, I think it was diphtheria and whooping cough and something wrong with her nose. She had an operation lying on the kitchen table, and she says she still remembered the bones cracking in her head as she was having them pulled out. He was a quack, they said afterwards. But anyways, her father decided, what girl needs any more than an eighth grade education anyway? And the school said, well, we'll give her her eighth grade diploma, even though she wasn't here much this year. And she was done. Not with her education, but with her schooling. Now, she stayed home for a few years and helped with the babies and, baked bread, tons of bread, and a lot of other cooking and cleaning and stuff. And then she got to be a nanny at one of the lawyer's houses in the town. Now, she would stay there all week, but she would come home on Saturdays after she got paid, and she would come home to see that baby brother of hers that's 4 years older than me. Well, as soon as she got home, Grandpa took all of her money, of course, because she didn't need any. She was living over with them until Mrs. Williamson finally got wise to this when she noticed my mother never came home with any money, and or back to their house, that is. And she says, I'll pay you when you come back from your folks' house from now on. Well, it was about that time that my mother discovered layaway. Layaway meant you could buy something, and she only liked good things. Her idea was that quality was much better than quantity. So she would only lay away nice dresses or nice skirts or blouses or whatever. And she would pay on those and pay on them till she could bring them home. In fact, her wedding dress was one that she had just finished paying for. Not a wedding dress, but a dress. You didn't buy just a wedding dress. But she loved layaway. Now, I remember the first time I really realized what layaway was. I was maybe at least four years old. And it was time for her to go put a new winter coat in layaway. It was August. And it's been a few years since she'd had one. So she was going to get on the bus and go get a coat to put in layaway so it'd be all paid for by the time of the end of November, October, or beginning of November. I remember as she got ready to go out the door, my dad saying, hey, Toots, You know, I'm getting sick and tired of all these black and navy and gray and brown clothes. You always wear these dark, ugly colors just because they don't get dirty so fast. Why don't you get something with a little more pizzazz this time? Okay, she said. We didn't know what kind of pizzazz was going to happen. We didn't know until she brought home that paid-off coat the end of October. It was fire engine red. It was the brightest red I've ever seen. And then we noticed that something changed. When she brought home a new skirt after it got paid for, it was often red, or another bright color, but mostly red. Or that sweater, or that blouse, or those heels, they were often red. And then the fingernails got red. I didn't know till last night I was going to tell this. And then her lipstick got real bright red. And then, one day, some years later, the ultimate happened. You see, she was born with lots of freckles and red hair. And one day she came home, and I've never seen her hair as red as it was that day. You see, it was getting kind of gray. But she was not about to give up that crowning glory of red, even though she knew that in that town, in that time, that put her in the category of a loose woman. But she kept dyeing her hair nevertheless. She died when she was 85. We took her back up to Michigan to be buried. It was a long viewing. There's lots of relatives and friends up there. Lots of stories are up there, too. And I got a little tired, so I decided after supper to sit down for a while and just kind of watch people go up to the casket and let somebody else talk to them for a little while. It was almost like they were tiptoeing. They'd get up to the casket and look up. They were looking really serious. And then they'd peek into the casket. And many a time I heard them say, "Oh, she's wearing red." Yep, from her glowing red hair down to the tips of her red shoes that they couldn't see, she was wearing red. Now, what they didn't know is that my mother had told us quite a few times in her last few years, "If you don't bury me in red, I'll come back and haunt you." The lady wore red.